Welcome to everyone. I hope you're all having a pretty good morning. We're here for the third slash fourth day of Sunstone. Thank you all for attending this session for Queer Mormon Women. Before we begin, we ask that cell phones are turned off and those that are attending to be, you know, respectful and attentive. It's the mission of Sunstone to host thoughtful and respectful dialogue. Please keep that in mind when engaging with the Q&A portion of the session following the remarks of the presenters. Those who cannot abide by these guidelines should refrain from commenting and will be asked to leave should they become disruptive. This session is being recorded and will be able to be purchased after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. If you haven't already, please consider subscribing to Sunstone Magazine at the registration desk as well. Your support goes directly towards keeping the symposium and 40 years of thoughtful dialogue alive and sustainable. Don't forget to check out the bookstore in the ballroom hosted by Benchmark Books, considering purchasing a book or two to support Mormon studies and scholars. The session is 60 minutes long, and we ask that both the audience and the presenters keep within the frameworks of that time so that we can allow for the next session to start on time. This panel features queer Mormon women from various levels of church involvement and various places on the spectrum of sexual or romantic orientation. They will be offering insights into diverse experiences of people inhabiting the intersection between Mormonism, LGBTQIA+ experience, and feminism. The presenters will be speaking in the following order. Brianna Cluck is a male-to-female transgender woman living in Orem, Utah. She has a deep and abiding interest in Mormon history and Mormon sociology. Ellen Kushner. serves as the event and project manager and conference co-chair for Affirmation. She is studying political science with the goal of becoming a civil rights lawyer. Christian Carden is finishing an MA in English at BYU and spends most of her free time working with the BYU Women's Studies program. She will be starting a PhD at UCLA in the fall, studying 20th century British literature, queer theory, and film. Chelsea Gibbs is finishing up her master's degree in film studies at USC after receiving a bachelor's degree in media arts studies from BYU. She's a regular attendee at the Los Angeles Affirmation meetings. Megan Howarth is an asexual and aromantic individual who enjoys participating in feminist and LGBTQIA activism. In her spare time, she enjoys reading, watching Netflix, and playing with cats. And finally, Avriel is earning a PhD in English literature. She writes about the intersection of Mormonism, queer theory, and feminism at Young Mormon Feminists and The Exponent. I'm going to turn it over to you guys.
Do you want to start?
Sure.
These might be
very short. Okay, well, I'm going to infringe on Brianna's space here. My name is Ellen Kester. I live here in Salt Lake, and I grew up in a little town in Defiance, Ohio. And I'm not kidding. It really was called Defiance, Ohio, and I think it rubbed off on me. I'm queer, I'm a woman, and I'm Mormon who converted from Catholicism, and I'm a registered Democrat. So I think everything that I do is a little bit defiant, and sometimes I seriously ask myself, am I doing this because I want to be different, or am I doing this because it's authentic? And most of the time it's because it's authentic. But I joined the church in 2009 and tried to serve a mission in 2011, where I was told from my bishop that I was not allowed to serve my mission because I was gay. So that was super fun experience for me. My experience within the church hasn't been great. My experience within the gospel has been great. A couple of weeks ago, I had somebody ask me if I was bi-religious, which I never really thought about before, because I'm still a practicing Catholic. I never really stopped when I joined Mormonism. Still go to communion, still take communion because I'm not allowed to take the sacrament, things like that that I never really thought about that I was able to do. It's something that allows me to express myself the way I want to express myself. Pope Francis is awesome. I am really excited about what Catholicism is going to be doing within the next couple of generations with the impact that he's having. And I'm really hoping that that trickles down into the LDS Church to see how these intersections are going to meet, because Catholicism and Mormonism are very, very similar. People don't really realize that, but there's so much crossover within the two faiths. Within my spare time, I work with Affirmation. It's a full-time job that I don't get paid for, but I love it. It's a really great gig. We do our annual conference every year in September. This year is going to be down in Provo. If you go to internationalconference.affirmation.org, you can find all the great information about it. We definitely encourage people to come by. I guess that's me. I'm gay and I love it. I've never really thought about the word queer until a few months ago, where I thought, I was like, oh, queer, like queer, Smear the Queer was a real game growing up. So the weird word queer for a very long time was really, left a really bad taste in my mouth. But I've really started to really resonate with it, at least for the community at large. Even though I don't use it personally, I don't, you know, say, yes, you know, my name is Alan and I'm queer, but I do use it for the community. And I think that's a really great umbrella term to be able to cover all different aspects of the LGBTQIA community. So it's good stuff. Sorry, I'm a little random today, but.
And I'm Brianna Cluck. I actually just barely moved to Provo, so I'm no longer in Orem, but they're basically the same town, so it's not a problem. I guess kind of my story is I am a transgender woman. I'm also asexual, pan-romantic. I realized I was... Well, I realized that asexuality was a thing back in, like, 2011 when there was a BBC article about it, actually. And I was like, oh, all these people, they're just totally normal like me. I don't know why they need to have a word for it. And then I realized that that's not how everyone was. And then... in terms of being transgender, I've known for a very, very long time, but then I tried to repress it a lot. Almost 2 decades later, I was 19 and preparing to go on a mission when I realized I should probably actually deal with this part of myself. And, well, I think I dealt pretty well, if I do say so myself. And I was born in Oklahoma, born in Shawnee, Oklahoma, in Pottawatomie County, which is a mouthful to some people. Moved to Norman, Oklahoma when I was 7, but I lived out in a trailer in the middle of nowhere. Lived in Oregon for about 6 months, that's a long story. Moved back to Norman, then moved here in 2009 when my dad got accepted to BYU. And it's been a good time ever since. I originally had my connection with the queer community through asexuality. That was like my first real foray into it. And then my first real experiences with feminism, I'd already kind of considered myself as like a feminist in like my earlier life, but I didn't really want to use the word because it's like the scary word that means you must burn bras and hate men everywhere, but apparently it's not, so it's great. And now I'm here today at Sunstone, when a few years ago I would have considered anyone going to such a thing a, you know, evil apostate who wants to bring others, you know, to bad places, therefore everyone is core horror. But I guess if that's true, then I'm in good company.
Sorry. Hello. My name is Chelsea Gibbs. I'm from Westchester, New York. Just north of the city. It's a cool place. I'm a fan. I was raised Mormon, and I'm still kind of trying to wrestle with what that means, because I realized I am also queer, and I don't know if I like avoid using words like lesbian or gay because they make me really uncomfortable, or I associate them with things that I still don't like or don't feel like I should be able to relate to. I don't know why queer is better, but for some reason it is for me. I have one sibling, like a really small Mormon family. It's kind of crazy. 5 first cousins and my one sibling, who is also gay. And he's older than me, and that was sometimes a struggle, just because I felt like before I kind of realized my own queerness, I had a lot of internalized homophobia. I kept wishing, like, why can't my brother be straight? Why can't he, like, want to date my really cool friends? And, like, our perfect little Mormon family is being fractured, and this is upsetting to me. Like, when I was in high school, I felt that way. While also, I think, repressing my own attraction to women, which was really painful and upsetting in retrospect. And then I, just this last year, I completely fell in love with this girl, and it completely changed my life. And at first in a good way, and then in a really terrifying way. Because at first it's just giddy and like happy, and I felt really good and really confident, and then suddenly was like, well, wait, what does this mean about everything that I've been raised to believe and everything that I love and cherish? Because I love, if not the church, I had a really great home ward, and I've loved that ward, and they felt like my family. But my mother used to say to me, my mother's favorite movie is A Room with a View. If you have not seen that movie, you should. Baby Helena Bonham Carter and lots of other great things. And she plays this character who's really quiet and kind of shy like me, but she is a really intense piano player and loves the piano. And someone in the movie tells her, like, I wish you could learn to live your life the way that you play the piano. And my mother used to say that to me about me and drumming, because I used to drum a lot. And ever since I came out to myself and to other people, I've started to finally feel like I am living my life like I play the drums. I'm more confident normally in myself. I feel better about myself. And that's such a wonderful and refreshing feeling to have. And I'm not really sure yet what the future holds in terms of these identities that seem to really be butting heads and conflicting a lot. But at the moment, I'm trying really hard to make it work as best as I can. I was about to close in the name of Jesus Christ. I'm going to pass.
Hi, I'm Megan Howarth. I live in Logan, Utah. I grew up mostly in Utah. I guess I was born in Provo. My first memories were actually in Kentucky, because we moved there when I was two. But we moved back to Utah when I was six. I am asexual. I am aromantic. Shorthand, arrow ace. For the longest time, I didn't realize that was what I was, just because in Young Women's, then we're always like, don't date. You have to stay away, or you have to make sure that you're going to have to be like the gatekeeper, because the boys are always going to want to do stuff, and you have to stop them. And so I just thought I was a good girl, because I was actually nearly 23 by the time I finally was able to admit to myself, okay, I'm at the age where my parents were already married. When am I going to start suddenly liking boys so I can marry one? And then I realized, okay, maybe I don't. And I'd heard the term asexual years ago, and finally realized that was what I was. And also realized later that I was aromantic, because a lot of people that are in the asexual community are still romantically attracted, like Brianna. But yeah, I'm not romantically attracted to anyone either. And I really like the term queer, because for the longest time I heard gay or LGBT, and that was not me. I was not attracted to girls, so I thought that's not me. I'm an ally to the community. And when I finally realized that, hey, I actually am part of the community, that's not my big, huge pet peeve, is when people try to generalize the community by saying gay or even LGBT. So I like it when they use the big long one, the LGBTQIA plus, or queer, which is an all-encompassing term. So, yeah, that's me.
I'm Kristen Cardin. I am from a multi-generation Mormon family, born and raised in Bountiful, Utah. I have 2 degrees from BYU. I have a bachelor's in English and a master's in English. And I will be getting a PhD, like Julia said, at UCLA, also in English. So I don't identify with any particular sexuality, but I do use the term queer to describe myself for convenience. I also like the term queer. I think it's a nice encompassing, it's like an umbrella term to talk about a lot of gender and sexual identities that are marginalized. So I'm queer. I am married, legally married to this beautiful woman next to me. I'm come from a large Mormon family as well. So being one of 7 children, and feeling as I'm here back at my parents' house right now and feeling like a lot of pressure to be the good Mormon daughter that I was for 21 years, it's rough. It's really difficult, clashing identities. But I have a lot of hope in queer Mormon women. I think queer Mormon women are the most exceptional people I've ever met. They're really extraordinary. I think it's a really important work that we're doing. I'm going to cry.
My name's Avril. I'm Kristen's wife, and she's really attractive. And I like her a lot. I grew up in Utah. I was born and raised in Utah by a mother who converted to Mormonism and a father who was Baptist and then just like came to church and started taking sacrament, but we haven't dunked him yet, so I don't know what's going on there. So my mom had these great dreams about like being the pioneer to start Mormonism in her family, and then she was only able to have 2 kids, which was difficult. She wasn't able to be sealed in the temple, which was difficult. And then my sister came out as bi, and I came out as queer. So we ruined everything for my mom, but like she'll get over it, hopefully. Someday, one of these days, she'll realize that we're decent people. I have a degree in English from BYU, a degree in English from the University of Arizona, and then I'm getting my PhD at UC Davis, and I study Shakespeare, and I study queer stuff. And I met Kristen at BYU and just like fell in love with her almost instantly. I didn't really realize it was love. I just thought we had a super weird friendship that like involved kissing. It was very confusing. It was very confusing, and we sorted things through, and like I feel very confident about my relationship with Kristen, because it's not convenient. It's not at all convenient to be married to a woman and to be Mormon as a woman. So I know that I love her. Let's see, what else? I have a very strong testimony of spirituality, of the gospel, of my particular Mormon understanding of how the universe may or may not work. And I really do think, I used to be very upset at how strict Mormonism was. And the more that I studied the history of our faith, the more I realized that like the LDS Church is the single most queerest religion in the world. Like, God came to a 14-year-old boy and said, like, look in these stones at this hat and you will, like, you know, like, that's just queer. It's so queer. And reading the stories of Mormon pioneers and of women in polygamous marriages, it's just so very queer in so many ways. And I really like that. And I really think it's sad that we don't embrace how weird we are. I use the term queer for myself for 2 reasons. The first is I'm not sure if I identify with anything else. The second is because it makes people extremely uncomfortable, and I like making people uncomfortable, because when people are comfortable, they won't learn anything. So I either call myself queer, or I call myself, like, lesbian, and I make sure to say it, lesbian, because that's, that, you know, if you say, like, hi, I'm a lesbian, that's really creepy. So, yeah, I write for the Young Mormon Feminist blog. I usually write very angry things because if being a queer Mormon woman makes you very angry. But I hope that I do. I guess my goal is to help protect other queer Mormon women and give them a community, that we don't have to prove ourselves to anyone, and we don't. We deserve to be loved and respected, regardless of any choices that we've made or anything in our identity. And I hope, I'm not sure exactly what my membership in the church will look like, because I am married, and that could mean excommunication. But I want to stay active in Mormon queer activism, because I don't want other people to have to go through what I had to go through to get to where I am. So anyway, I'm really grateful to have this panel so that we can maybe start, you know, or continue the building of a queer community.
Okay. And I'm Julia Hamilton. I'm the moderator for this panel, and I'm also a queer woman. Light on the Mormon, but that's how I was raised, so it is what it is. And I think we're probably at the point where we're ready to open it to questions. Mm-hmm. I guess I'll call on people if you want to raise your hands.
No, it's not church policy at all. It's the policy is that if you are celibate and you haven't done anything, you haven't had sex, you haven't broken the law of chastity at all, then you are just fine. And I remember when I came out, I had not verbalized my gayness to anybody. I hadn't said it out loud, even to myself. I'd said it to myself, but not out loud. And I called my bishop. This was days before I was supposed to go through the temple to receive my endowment. And I called my bishop, and I was like, you know, I just need to come talk to you for a second. He was like, oh, yeah, no problem. Because I had this tickle in the back of my head that said, you should tell your bishop. And I thought it was going to be like an admin thing, so that if I'm in the mission and I have a companion that it just was not going to work with, that all I would have to do is call the mission home, transfer, done and done. Like, that's what I had interpreted that feeling as. So I went into the bishop, and I said, Bishop, I think I might be gay. Like, you cannot be any more ambiguous than that. That is as ambiguous as it gets. But because I said the word gay, and because Elder Oaks and his brilliance, and I say that very angrily, in 1995 wrote an Ensign article that's titled Same Gender Attraction, where he says that the use of gay or lesbian as a noun indicates sexual behavior, which it doesn't, by the way. It doesn't at all, but he interpreted it that way. It is a thing. You can look it up. It's awful. But because he interpreted it as gay and as having sexual relationships with people, it just devolved.
And bishops would interpret it that way as well.
It's, and this is what's called priesthood roulette. You can have a bishop that is great and understands that it's not a sex thing. You know, if you say the word gay, you're not necessarily having sex. And others will completely implode. And it was awful. Like, it was truly traumatizing. It's something I will never forget. So,
officially, the rule is that if you've had heterosexual sex, you have to wait at least one full year before you're allowed to go on a mission. And if you've been active in a homosexual relationship, then it's at least 3 years, if at all. So,
yeah.
So, evidently, well, yeah. Let's be real. So there definitely is a policy difference there, but it wasn't even relevant in this case.
Because they don't like us?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think
this is the heteronormative issues within the church.
And I think that
no one really knows, it's just in the bishop's handbook, but I have heard people speculating along the lines of, well, you know, you're going to be spending a lot of time with people of the same gender while you're out on the mission, so, you know, you need to be really super repented. But it wasn't relevant in her case, and it was really just priesthood roulette.
Well, and the thing that kills me, too, is that I had no anticipation of having a problem with a companion. I mean, when you're on a mission, you're on a mission. Like, your entire thought process is very different than when you're in college and you want to date and have fun. I literally interpreted as, if there's a problem with a roommate where it just is not going to work, then I can call the mission home and I'll be fine. And instead, it just imploded. And I mean, I had a call to Scotland, Ireland. Has anybody been there? It's gorgeous, right? Beautiful. It's where my entire family history is from. I'm an Irish Catholic convert. There is nothing more of an inspired call than the call that I received. So it's been 4 years, and I'm still really bitter about it. And I'm not afraid to hide that, but I am.
So you didn't go on your mission then?
No.
They do.
Yeah.
Is this mic
working?
No.
Okay. Cool.
I'll just.
Believe
I'll
have
to throw it out.
I need to have more faith. Yes. That's the story of my life. More faith. Right. Yeah. This is a heteronormative mic right there. I have hidden my tracks as well as I could. I've hidden my tracks, if the word, because I think the last ward that I attended was in Arizona, an ward where there were just tons of college students coming and going, and they just don't keep track of records very well. And then I just kind of disappeared, not because I don't like church. It's because when I go to church, I have anxiety attacks, and I just, like, it's not good to have an anxiety attack when you're trying to, like, sing hymns and, like, take the sacrament and whatever. It just doesn't work. So... So I don't know how well the church knows exactly where I am right now, and I would like to keep it that way because just recently there was, I think this was in the news, there was two men who were married, the same-sex marriage, and they had not had much to do with the church for many years. And then suddenly, out of the blue, one of them gets a call from their bishop and is like, okay, we're having a court of love for you to decide whether or not you'll be excommunicated. So, and again, this is the priesthood roulette thing, where it just, if one bishop in particular thinks that it's their job to get rid of queer people and to get them out of the church, then they will just, you know, they might make it their mission to do that, and they might look you up even though you haven't, you know, you aren't attending church and, like, throwing your gay pride parades, you know, during sacrament meeting or whatever, who knows. even if you're not very involved, they'll still search out for you and find you. And so that's something that that has been an issue before. I doubt that it's going to happen anytime soon, but I think the more involved that I get, and the more involved, like, it's actually really frightening for me to have my real name here, because I don't usually write under my real name, and I think the more involved that I'm going to get, someone's going to get really, really ticked off, and is going to make it their job to, like, go after me, and in which case, hopefully by that time, excommunication for me will just be like, well, too bad, you know.
So it might be a combination of things.
Yeah.
Right.
But if my bishop, who might still have my records, I think, in Arizona, if he, for example, found out and wanted to excommunicate me, that could be done. And, yeah, and it wouldn't be, I mean, that would be fully within his power to do so.
Regardless of any writing or other stuff she's doing. Just being married is enough.
Yeah, I hear tell of wards that are very friendly, that are very affirming, that would want you to come to church. But I don't know if they would draw the line at, like, letting you be baptized, though, or or not excommunicating you. I don't have statistics on this, but yeah, in general, I do think if we tried to go to a ward, we would be ex because we've been baptized.
Yeah, but that is church policy,
isn't it? Well, we don't.
It's in the church handbook. Yeah, it's been pointed out.
In the bishop's handbook, there is some. The wording is vague. It basically says, for all of these different sins, one of which is homosexuality, bishops can excommunicate people, but they don't have to, kind of. Like, it's just a vague wording. So it's totally, yes, lots of bishops do. No, not all bishops do. But you're totally playing roulette. There's no guarantees, because bishops change all the time.
Yeah, just to add to that, I think the difference that I find, where I find it to be discriminatory, is because I have a number of friends who have fallen away from the church and have gone out and had all of the heterosexual sex they have wanted. And bishops have just said, okay, they're inactive, I'll just leave them alone. But there seems to be like a special prize. I don't know what it is. In some bishops' eyes, there seems to be a special prize to search out, you know, the most heinous crimes or something like that. And so that's why I'm concerned. I feel like if I went inactive and fooled around in other ways that are not, you know, our current hobby horse, which is queer people, then I would probably be a lot safer, you know, than being like the boring, nearly Mormon, but oh no, in a same-sex marriage person that I am.
Well, with me, this has been sort of a journey. Originally, I did really like the concept of Heavenly Mother just because of, like, a divine feminine. Now I just sort of, like, see God as just sort of this all-encompassing thing. And I do see God sort of as feminine and just not married to anyone just because that's sort of the way I roll, just being asexual, aromantic. Like, I know that for some people, having God being in a couple relationship is nice for them. I like God being the just all-powerful, all by themselves sort of thing. So,
this is actually a really interesting question. I've never really done a whole lot of discussion about my personal relationship to Heavenly Mother. I've talked about Heavenly Mother, and I think that the concept of Heavenly Mother is very neat. For me, on a more personal level, I kind of feel that Heavenly Mother and Heavenly Father, you know, they are our spiritual parents and whatever. And they're an example of a type of relationship. But I feel like while they are an example of a type of relationship, just because they are an example, that doesn't mean it's the only thing people have to do. That's been something that's been very frustrating to me, is that people look at examples of things that God has done or that the Savior has done and say that that is what everyone needs to do. But at the same time, Jesus wore sandals, but we don't all have to wear sandals. He was just a cool guy who also wore sandals. You know, I mean, I'm sorry if that's a little sacrilegious, but I feel like while they are a great example and they're, you know, I mean, obviously, but I feel like they know that they're not the only model that has to be followed.
I think my experience with Heavenly Mother really pulls on my Catholic side of myself, that I've never been able to understand the idea of having Heavenly Mother and Heavenly Father being married, to quote that at all. It's just very odd to me, but it isn't odd for there to be a male deity and a female deity. That's not weird to me. The idea that they're married is weird, but not that they exist is weird. So I used to kind of hate the idea of Heavenly Mother, because my mother and I are, I mean, we are as explosive can be in terms of relationship. It's awful. So the idea of having a Heavenly Mother when I hated my mom and my mom hated me was just a really odd place to come by. The idea of Heavenly Mother lets me see the very feminine parts of myself and see that in a glorified spiritual way, and say that these are traits that I know that my Heavenly Mother allowed me to have and taught me in the pre-existence and you know, allowed these things to the seed to set and grow. And then there are parts of a male deity that I can really, you know, resonate with, that just makes sense to me. But personally, I love the idea of Heavenly Mother. I think that the idea of only having a male deity is horrific, not even just from a queer sense, but from a feminist perspective. Like, yeah, let's just, you know, you're patriarchy. Yeah, heavenly patriarchy, you know, be like Jesus. Well, Jesus is a guy, and you're telling me that gender is eternal and gender is essential, and if you want me to be feminine, why aren't you giving me a feminine deity to have an example of? So in short, I love it. I love the idea of Heavenly Mother.
I think that's a very astute question, because it brings up the way that queer politics and feminist politics can kind of clash. And a lot of Mormon feminists just think that, like, queer Mormon feminists are just, like, their best buddies. And we're like, well, there's a little bit that, you know, a little bit extra that we need that sometimes clashes. There's two things that I have thought about this a lot. The first thing that I would suggest is that according to what I was taught, Heavenly Mother and Heavenly Father are not the only deities out there, you know? So who's to say that somewhere else there's Heavenly Father and Heavenly Father numero dos, you know? Who's to say that the heteronormative nuclear family is the design, is the eternal design? And I've noticed that kind of Mormons like to create God after their own image, you know? That when their polygamous God is polygamous, and when their not polygamous God isn't polygamous, right? So there's that issue as well. The other thing that is important to remember is that I'm pretty sure we have no idea how babies are made after this life. Pretty sure. So I'm thinking that if there is a next life and Kristen and I get like a rad planet, we'll figure out some other awesome way that doesn't involve 9 months of labor, you know, in order to have a baby, because who wants that? Anyway, so there's, I think when we look at that in that way and say that, like, when, you know, when my mom tells me, like, well, you know, you're going to have to be in a heterosexual relationship if you want to go to the celestial kingdom, like, that's so uncreative. That's so uncreative. And there's so many more ways to look at things. And who knows, maybe, I think I do like the idea that there is a divine feminine and a divine masculine to look at, except for the fact that feminine and masculine are constructs, right? So that's its own problem. Perhaps there are other sets of gods ruling over worlds in which there are three genders or four genders, and we happen to be very poor here to only have two. There could be a multiplicity of different ways to look at things. And so maybe, I mean, again, if Kristen and I decide that we want to rule over our own planet, maybe we'll get together with some of our best friends and be like, hey, do you want to create a planet with us? We'll have all these different kind of things. It'll look like this. We're going to, you know, like, abolish 9 months of pregnancy and replace it with just, like, being in a hot tub for a while. I don't know. There's so many different ways to think of it. And I am glad that we have in our religion, again, in our very queer religion, the idea of this feminine divine that complements with the masculine divine. But I think we can push it further. I think we're putting a limit on God, and I don't want to do that.
I just wanted to interrupt. I apologize for some of my questions you may have already looked at, but first, I have no interest in this. I'm an academically person, so this is not an insult. It's the sense that I'm asking it, but maybe there'd be a different question. But are, one, I don't understand why the use of the word queer is used as opposed to just lesbian. I have no concept of that. Two, I'm interested, and I do have some gay members in my family, our cousins, none of women. Did you feel this orientation? I'm sure heard this question a lot. When you were younger, or did it just suddenly kind of realize it as you got older? Third, one just a statement. Having served in many patient groups, my experience has been different than what you described. We did not go on a witch hunting for gays. We were so busy trying to get somebody to teach primary that we didn't care that's what anybody was doing. But the difference was simple. If we detected that someone was hurting someone, we knew somebody was out running around chasing four or five women. But if they were adults consenting and we didn't get a feel that there was an abusive relationship going on, we tended not to do anything. But if we had a woman come to us and say, you know what's happening, and this effect that's happening to me and my family, then we would take a look and say, yeah, this is doing harm to somebody, that we would then take a look at and say, we think we ought to be looking at that. Or if the person wanted church sanction for something, wanted temple recommend, you want to go do something, then we would. But by and large, we are so busy we could care less when anybody's doing otherwise. But I am curious, just those two simple questions from a person who doesn't study this area at all or have a personal interest. It's not an insult, it's just my life. It's sport. I'm a sports guy. I'm not dealing with this kind of stuff.
So to answer your first question, well, we're not all lesbians. We come from a variety of different backgrounds. For example, I'm asexual but panromantic. Megan is asexual and aromantic, and so to say that we are all lesbian Mormon women would be disingenuous, just because we're not all lesbians. I mean, I'm asexual, I'm also transgender, which is a different thing in the queer community, so I guess that answers your first question, because we're not all lesbians. Second question, in terms of orientation, to be honest, because I'm asexual, it's my orientation just as background, in case you didn't hear that earlier. Basically always knew, but I didn't know that that was any different. I just assumed people pretended to want to have sex because they were, like, weird or wanting to be macho or something, to be honest. And in terms of being transgender, I knew that I was... It wasn't so much that I knew I was transgender at a very young age. It was when I was about 7 when I was told that I wasn't going to grow up to be like my sisters. And I vehemently opposed that. And then proceeded to try and repress those feelings, because the only trans people you see in the media back in the 90s and early 2000s is Buffalo Bill, and I'm not a murderer, last I checked. In answer to your third question, I'm glad that in your experience in the bishopric it was like that. When I told my bishop that I am transgender, this was before I came out, before I did anything about it, I just told him that I am transgender and that I prayed about it and I felt it was correct. His response was to pull out the Church Handbook of Instruction, detail the parts in which I can be excommunicated for that, and then tell me that while the feelings will never go away, I must learn to try to reduce them, because if I ever acted out on them, my suffering would be fourfold in the afterlife. So I'm glad you had a really great time in the bishopric, but sometimes there are bishops who are very much opposed to our existence.
Yeah, I really want to echo that and say thank you for not going after people in a witch hunt. That is very important for bishops to not do, is to go after our queer brothers and sisters. However, I mean, we've had at least, three people just in this room that have said, this happens, four if you include, and I don't know your name, I'm so sorry, but five, okay, yeah, at least five now. And I mean, that's from my very limited knowledge of the people in the room that have had these very negative experiences. So not all bishops are like that. You're absolutely correct. There are bishops like that. There are stake presidents, and there are far too many. There's a reason why once people come out, in almost every case, they stop attending. Or they will ward hop until they find a ward that is even moderately accepting. The only reason that I personally am active right now, and I still only attend maybe once a month, but it's because I have a Relief Society president that will not let Relief Society devolve. I have a Sunday school president that will not let Sunday school devolve. And I have a bishop who has never talked to me about queer issues, but he also has not tracked me down and drugged me into his office, which I'm considering a win. And when you consider that a win, when you know somebody's not outwardly attacking you and threatening your membership, that's saying something. To answer a couple of other of your questions, I identify and I personally use the words gay and lesbian interchangeably and equally. I am starting to use the word queer because I absolutely understand and agree that it's a great umbrella term, and I love it for the community, even though I don't use it. And quite honestly, for all women, lesbian just doesn't fit. I can understand how straight women are attracted to men. Like, I get it. I understand when I look at whoever I can't think of right now, you know, some really hot guy that I can't think of. Like, I can get it. I can watch Magic Mike and understand why women watch that movie. I get it. I just never, ever, ever, ever want to have sex with a man. That doesn't make me bisexual. Some people might for their own individual purposes, but for me it doesn't. So it's important to understand that there is a spectrum, it's just something to be very keen of. Use the label that others use. For Brianna, that's being asexual, panromantic, transgender. For me, I am cisgender and queer, lesbian, gay. For others, it may be very different. If somebody identifies as same-sex attracted, even though I deplore that term with every bone in my body, it is important that you use it if that is how they identify. And it's important to use queer, gay, transgender, whatever the person uses, if they use it.
We have about 5 minutes left.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the rainbow, too. It's an umbrella term. I love that. I did a study of gay Mormons, highly religious gay Mormons, 2002, 2007, follow-up study, and I tried as hard as I could to get people from all the different backgrounds, and I ended up with only about 5 women in my sample and about 215 men.
Yep.
And when you go to affirmation, you probably realize that you might be one of 3 women and out of 300 people there. Gay men tend to be very involved in religion and very much going on missions, and I think we're missing a voice. There are lots of voices. I love the 5 women that participated in my study. They had the most interesting stories. I loved hearing them. The one was my cousin. I went out and got her to fill out the survey for me. But I have some ideas of why that is, but I'd like you to share what you think. I think there's maybe several reasons for that, so I don't necessarily am looking for the answer, but I'm looking for some variety of answers.
Part of what I think is that I think homosexuality is seen as a male issue in the church, like anything that is related to sex, like masturbation or pornography. Right, these are male issues. We had like a lesson in Relief Society once about masturbation, and I thought, oh my gosh, how are we talking about this in like the what? And but everyone was talking about their sons and like, how does this affect my boys and what do I do? And I was like, did you know Fifty Shades of Grey was published and it was not published for boys? But
hey, some boys.
Some boys. But I don't know. I just think that because of that, it takes longer for women to recognize it in themselves and to even recognize that, like, this is the most queer Mormon woman I've ever been around. And Averill actually is the first one I ever spoke to. I was like, how does this exist? I went to an affirmation meeting, and I was so excited. I'm like, I'm going to finally meet other, like, queer Mormon women. And the woman was like, you're the first, like, queer girl we've had. And I was like, oh, okay. In Los Angeles. I was like, where else? And so one of them put me in touch with Averill through Facebook, actually, and that it has completely changed my life. And this is actually the first time we met, so hi. We shook hands. It was very formal and not very queer, but... I don't know. I think that's why.
And I think this is where, like, I've been a feminist for years. I think that this is very much a feminist issue. Like with the and like she mentioned before, then anything having to do with sex is basically assumed to be male. But in the church, then women are very much taught to sort of their needs. Like, sort of set aside their needs, and a good Mormon woman is very sacrificing, and thinks about other people more. Whereas men are not really taught that, so they like in a situation where where a woman is. Not attracted to men, then they may not. Yeah, it very much is. Well, basically, they're not even supposed to take the initiative, and they're supposed to be pursued by a man. And so, first of all, it'd be harder for them to even realize than it would be for a man who is taking the initiative. Who is thinking about his own needs, thinking about who he is attracted to, rather than just sort of waiting passively. Another thing, actually, and this is sort of there just a couple weeks ago in the Feminist Mormon Housewives Facebook group, I remember that there was a very long thread that was created specifically for queer people. Oh, they were the only people allowed to talk. In that thread, and I was surprised how many people that I know, like that are active in the feminist community, that are like bisexual, that are married to men, that this was the first I'd heard of it. Like it felt very underground. Like they just really didn't make it an issue. Like because they. I don't know where I'm going with that, but yeah, there are a lot of us. They're just sort of hidden.
Okay, we are about out of time. Do we have any like last comments from over here?
Yeah, I'll just say something to that last question. So, I feel very deeply Mormon feminist. I was with Ordained Women at the priesthood session. I have been a feminist for years and years before I knew what feminist was. And I feel as a Mormon woman, I feel all the weight of being a Mormon woman and all of the difficulty of feeling like I am a second-class citizen as a Mormon woman. I also feel very distinctly as a queer person that I am a second-class citizen. So I think in a lot of people who are in my situation, two strikes against you, you're not going to be involved anymore because that's mainly what we found.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I would, just to add to that, people go where they feel safe. I went to Affirmation, I don't feel safe. I come to Sunstone, I don't feel safe. I go home, I don't feel safe. Everywhere I go, unless I'm like back in my house in Davis with Kristen and we close the door and lock the door and keep everyone else, that's where I feel safe. And I don't want to speak for anyone else, but I am on full defense mode here and full attack mode, and I don't feel like it's wrong for me to be on full defense mode, because I don't have time to be vulnerable. I don't have the time to do that. And so, I mean, it is so hard. As Kristen pointed out, it's so hard to find feminist Mormons in the church. It's much harder to find feminist Mormon women in the church. Much harder if you're queer, in addition to that. And if you are a woman of color, in addition to that, then you're probably nowhere near us. So if you want people to be there, you've got to go above and beyond what you're doing right now to make it, you know, it's not just the absence of homophobia, it's the presence of love. We don't have any sort of like radar to sense if you guys like us or not. For all we knew when we walked in here, it was a whole bunch of people who were ready to attack us, but we came anyway. And we are so glad for Sunstone to make the space for us. But keep in mind that we can't walk into a place and make it and feel safe unless you go out of your way, beyond out of your way, to make it safe. And then maybe we'll consider letting our guard down a little bit. There's so many other things why. But the most important thing I would say is that as much as you feel like you are making yourself safe, try a little harder. Do a little more. And maybe then people will be okay with that.
Julia, I have one very, very quick thing, and then...
Wonderful, go for it.
Then we can be done.
Okay.
I absolutely want to echo what she said. After my mission imploded, I was furious. I can't tell you how many resignation letters I have written and then put in a file folder because I just can't send it in yet. Because we don't feel safe, it's because people are not educated, and it's not their fault. It's not your fault if you're not educated. It is your fault if you choose not to be educated once you learn that you're not educated. So many queer Mormons get very defensive when they're approached for people to educate them because you guys have Google. You can educate yourselves, but having an individual to educate you can be very important. So for me personally, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself, if you have questions about what it means to be queer, what it means to be a queer woman, I will answer it for you. I don't care how offensive it is, because I understand that you need to get those questions out, and sometimes you don't know have a better way to say it. So if you want to be educated, ask. Ask somebody if they're willing to help you, because as soon as you are educated, you will treat other people better. And once other people are being treated better, who have been marginalized for decades and centuries within the church, things will start to get better so that I will stop being angry and Avril will stop being angry and we'll start feeling safe and I can go to any ward that I want to and not just mine and feel okay. I can go into any Relief Society meeting and say what I believe instead of, you know, holding my tongue and saying, you don't want to have the bishop find out who you are and call your bishop. You don't want that. You know, I want to be able to go somewhere where it's safe. So get educated, ask somebody to help you, and we will help you get educated in any way that we can.
Okay, I think we'll end on that note. Thank you very much for attending, and thank all the panelists for being vulnerable.